Welcome to the Teach and Tell podcast. I'm your host, Mike Raymer, Executive Director of the Georgia Council on Economic Education, an organization whose mission is to help teachers teach economics and personal finance. Come along as we spend time with some great teachers to learn more about what it's really like in the classroom. Today's guest is John Chancey. John, tell us a little bit more about yourself and what you're doing these days. Where are you teaching?
Well, okay. So first of all, thank you so much for having me on, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here. So I've been teaching for over 10 years now. Actually, I'm getting into my 11th year now. Now, currently I'm not teaching full time, but I'm just teaching a class here and there at the University of Oklahoma for their ed psych department. I currently work as a college and career advisor for a charter school here in Oklahoma City. Well, it's like statewide, but I work in the Oklahoma City section. But prior to that, I taught for full time for 10 years. I taught high school for 3 years at a pretty large suburban high school, PC North, here in Oklahoma City. And then as I was going through graduate school for my PhD, I taught as an adjunct instructor for a few years, then got a full-time gig teaching psychology courses for about 7 years or so. 10 years of experience. A lot of it's nowadays, it's more like kind of online rather than in person, but started off in person and kind of transitioned more to virtual teaching now. But yeah.
Back in high school, what courses did you teach?
When I was a high school teacher, I taught psychology and AP psychology, which you would think there's not a lot of difference in that, but one is very much geared towards prepping for the AP test. The other one is much more just kind of surface level. And for fun, they used to put me in charge of a class called, this is a podcast, so you can't see this, but I'm air quoting, critical thinking. Nice. Was a class that they just stuck kids in where they had no other place to go. And there was no curriculum whatsoever. So a lot of times I was just left with a room full of 30 random kids and just, okay, figure it out. Let's find something to do for the next hour. Most of my teaching was about psychology.
Yeah. I think some people think, oh, it'd be great if you get to teach a course with like no real rules or anything. No, that's hard. Like really hard.
It was a disaster. The last time they had me do it, I was just in this weird kick where I was listening to the podcast, Serial, the one about the guy who was on trial. And I just decided, I was like, you know what? We're going to listen to this class. Let's do some critical thinking. Is this really, let's dive through each episode. That's what the class turned out to be. I'm like, well, you gave me nothing to work with. And
yeah,
there we go.
Yeah. Oh boy. Cause you really could say you're critically thinking about anything, right?
Seriously. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I enjoyed the psychology classes much more than I did those experiences, but it was all fun.
Yeah. So you mentioned you're doing a lot of things virtually now, and I kind of want to look at your experience through that lens. Tell the world, if you would, like folks who aren't educators necessarily listening to this podcast, what's it like teaching virtually? What's the upside? What's the downside? What are the challenges?
Oh yeah. So, I mean, it's very different, obviously. I was finishing up my PhD and also teaching courses like right when the pandemic started. So like everything switched from in-person to virtual very quickly. So I had to adapt. And prior to that, I didn't really enjoy asynchronous or virtual. I didn't really enjoy the online experience of teaching. I really thought like true teaching took place when you're standing in front of students in a room and, you've got them engaged and all that. But actually, I've kind of grown to enjoy teaching in a virtual, whether it's synchronous or asynchronous. I like that kind of flexibility that gives me as an instructor and students. So I think that's like one of the benefits for sure, is just the flexibility that comes with it. But the downside is of course, engagement. It's just so hard to, I think it's challenging to get a room full of students to be engaged with what you're trying to teach. But then if you put another wall between you and the students, now you're separated, you're virtual. Who knows, some of them are on camera, some of them are not. Even if they're on camera, who knows if they're actually paying attention to you or not. So it's challenging, but also I think, I don't know, it's kind of a fun challenge. I think it makes you have to be more mindful, maybe to get out of just like lecturing and teaching and try to get students to be more interactive, maybe throwing a breakout group, whatever you got to do to like just get them more interactive. Yeah. So it's challenging, but it's a good challenge.
Mm-hmm. I think back to when I was in the classroom, you know, you go in early in your career thinking every student's going to be hanging on every word you say, and that simply isn't the case. Right. So eventually I kind of made a deal with myself to sort of, I know all these kids really aren't interested in what I'm teaching. I'm going to ignore that and pretend they are, just for sanity's sake. And then I've done a couple webinars, you know, as an educator, and it just, I couldn't even lie to myself because you look and there's 30 images and so many of them had their cameras off and you're like, this, what am I'm just talking to myself here. Like, this is tough.
Sure. And I hate to say that I've been a person who's been on the other side of one of those webinars. And there's times where, yeah, I'll turn my camera off and I'm like, hey, I think I'm going to do the dishes while I listen to this person talk. Yeah. Like, I can multitask. That's fine. So I imagine students are doing very similar things. Sure. And, you know, for some, maybe they're able to pay attention. Others, maybe they're just, who knows, tuning you out, whatever. But
yeah, is I'm the same way. When I have virtual meetings, unless I'm leading it or like one-on-one like this, I'm definitely doing other stuff every single yeah. time. So John, teaching in general, not just virtually now, what do you think is the most rewarding part about being a teacher?
Well, I have to say the schedule is probably the most rewarding aspect. I am someone who really thrives in a teacher's schedule. I really enjoy kind of the flow, having lots of breaks, kind of working the 8 maybe it's not necessarily 9 to 5. Sometimes it might be 7 to 3 or 8 to 4 or something like that. But your day is very flexible, and especially teaching in a virtual setting, I feel like I have even more flexibility. Summer's off, all that good stuff. Like, that's kind of overstated, but I do definitely really enjoy that. The thing I think that I value the most, though, about teaching is the relationships you make with the people you teach, the people you work with, just in general. Like, you're when you spend so much time with people and that way where you're imparting knowledge and hopefully growing together, it's like it's hard not to develop really close relationships. And some that I feel like I still talk with some of my students that I had 10 years ago, my first year of teaching. So I just think that, like, the fact that they remember something that I taught, or I'm still able to, like, you know, have those memories of, you know, teaching these students, like, it's so cool. I think it's such a unique opportunity that most people won't get to experience because they aren't teachers.
That's because you're there one day and then in walk, you know, 150 brand new people you've never met before.
Yeah.
And like, we're going to be a family together here for the next, you know, 18 weeks or whatever it is, school year.
Yeah.
I'm going to see you every day.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah, I used to when I was a high school teacher, when we would start the first day of class, I would say we are becoming noble friends because we're going to grow together. I'm going to teach you things that you didn't know. And hopefully you'll do the same for me.
Yeah.
Whether that's about being a teacher. Yeah, they really do. And it's, yeah, every class, every year, just very different. And it's a new way to kind of grow for everyone.
And also it's neat in that, you know, you always kind of see where the finish line is. I taught it was a semester long course. So it's like, even if things weren't going well, you could say, well, in another 15 weeks or whatever it was, I get a new batch and I can start over and try again, try to be better next time. That's another cool perk of teaching, is it's that constant renewal, if you will.
Yeah.
From year to year, semester to semester. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, how about, you mentioned some challenges of teaching virtually. Can you think of any overriding big picture educational challenges that are out there that you face that you would like to see corrected? And if so, how would you correct them?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest sort of challenge facing teachers, at least, and this could be this could vary by state to state. I don't know how much of this was your experience, you know, teaching in Georgia, but I feel like the lack of respect for the profession overall is very challenging. And with that, I think comes lack of pay, which I think is very evident in the state that I work in. Schools were one of the lowest paying states in the union. And I think because of that, you see people leaving the profession who otherwise would be great teachers and could stay and benefit students for years and years. But the turnover, I think that all of that kind of goes together, pay, turnover, respect. I think all of that, I don't know. That was just something I always felt was lacking even when I was teaching, and now being a little bit removed, doesn't seem like things are too much better. Yeah, I think that's I don't know. It starts from up high. There's a lot of weird politics going on with teaching right now in the state of Oklahoma and nationwide. So I don't know. That all kind of fits together, and it doesn't. I don't know if there's a singular solution either. I don't know if waving a magic wand and saying every teacher now makes 10,000 more or whatever more. I don't know if that would fix everything. It would certainly help, but I don't know. I think it's a much more convoluted kind of problem.
So. Again, an odd thing about the career is that if you're the best teacher ever, there's nowhere to go. Like, you can't go up, because if you go up, you're an administrator, and you're like, well, I don't want to do that. I want to be a teacher.
Yeah.
So you're not, that weird ceiling of.
Sure. Yeah. And it's not, I don't know. It's not like the best teacher can't hold out, like, you know, the best NFL player or whatever. It's not, it's just, there's not a, and I know there's not, that's not a one-to-one equivalent, but. Yeah, it's just your reward for being the best teacher is you get to be named the best teacher. You get to show up probably at the White House or something, and a lot of respect for that. But I don't know. Maybe we should pay the best teachers more. I don't know.
And there's some areas in Georgia where, like, not necessarily the best teacher, but like there's a shortage of math and science teachers, so they're like, their contracts are higher than everybody else's.
Sure.
And it's like, dang it, man. I mean, good for them. I see how markets work, but it's like, in social studies where I was, it's like, I'm a dime a dozen. Like, there's 50 people out there that want this job. So,
exactly.
I can't bargain for a higher wage.
Right. Yeah.
At all. John, can you think of a teaching memory that it just sticks with you? Like, man, this was the peak of my teaching. This is what I love most about it.
I don't know if it's a singular memory as in like this one time that I remember it happening, but I used to really enjoy, kind of like as a classroom management strategy, I used to meditate with my students to start the class period. And I say meditate, like, I would just turn the lights down for a sec. I had this kind of Tibetan singing bowl that I would chime a couple times, and then I would just sort of prompt them to do certain things. Like, first off, I would prompt them to sit up straight. And that was the thing that I knew it worked immediately, because I would have a class full of like 30 students. And as soon as I said the word sit up straight in a very calm kind of manner, quiet, and the room is quiet and everything is just settled, you would see students who had their heads down normally, kind of like that. Yes. And all of a sudden they would shoot up and their backs would be straight, and their eye, I'd say, close your eyes, and their eyes would close. And I would just like, hey, just focus on your breath for a couple minutes, breathe in, breathe out, just a couple things to like think about their breath, just to like, let's get centered, let's get focused. And I think the first time I ever saw like a class full of students just sit upright like that, I was like, oh my God, they're listening to me. Like, I remember there was just, I would just do that with different classes. And I don't know, there was like a time where I maybe like didn't do it for a couple weeks. And I even had students who were like, hey, we want to meditate again. Why? We feel like anxious right now. Like, what's going on? So I don't know. I always thought that was fun. It was something different that they weren't getting anywhere else in their classes.
And that was going to be my point. I guarantee you they never do that before in school ever.
Yeah. And it was just fun. I remember I had a teacher come and observe me. My first year of teaching, they gave me a mentor teacher who would come and watch me. And I think she was supposed to be taking notes too, but she stopped and started doing it as well. It was just like, all right, cool. This is working out. If the adults in the room are doing it too, then I guess it can't be too bad.
Yeah. That's a winner right there. Nice.
Yeah.
John, can you think of when you do finally decide, like, all right, no more teaching for me, then wherever you're working, what do you want your last lesson ever to be? You could teach anything. What are you going to teach?
Well, not my real answer, but I had a weird incident my first year of teaching where two students showed up to a Halloween kind of dress up event, dressed as NBA basketball players. And when I mean that, they were full on in NBA basketball, not just uniform, but they decided to do the blackface as well. So that was my weirdest lesson I've ever teach. I really want to impart that everywhere I go. Please don't show up to school in blackface. Yeah. Please don't show up anywhere in blackface for that matter. But no, I'm kidding. that the real lesson, I think, that if I had to teach one, was when I taught psychology, I always thought it was fun. We would do a day where we would make Rorschach tests together, where, you know, I'd bring the paint, I would bring paper, and I'd have the students, they would take their paper, fold it in half, put a little paint in it, fold it in half, and then just open it up and talk about what they would see. I'd let them go hang them out on the wall. I don't know. I just like that lesson because it was one where, like, every single kid in the room was talking, engaging, like having fun. It, some lessons I would have where it's like half the class is interested, the other half is not, kind of like what we talked about earlier. You know, yeah. Some lessons are going to hit, some aren't. But that was always one when I would teach it. It was just always fun and like always getting to hear students, like the quietest student in the class would open up about what they thought their Rorschach looked like. And so it's just kind of a fun lesson. It just kind of gets us out of like the normal, just hearing me talk about psychology, you know, doing that kind of stuff. And I remember I had a teacher who was a psychology, my first psychology teacher in high, was a teacher in high school who did the same lesson. And it was just so much fun. And I was like, I always remembered that. I was like, if I'm going to be a teacher, I want to be able to do that with my students. And the fact that I did was always a lot of fun.
Did you ever let that teacher know that you were doing that lesson?
I don't know if I ever did or not. I should probably, it was Mr. Fleming.
When we're done talking, let him know or her know. Because I
think we're Facebook friends, so I do need to reach out. I know I have talked to him, but I guess I don't know if I ever expressed that specifically. So you're right. I probably should. That's a good homage.
I guarantee it'll make their day.
Yeah, for sure.
To hear that, yeah. Like, oh, cool. Nice. All right. I want to come do that. So when you do this, call me.
Okay.
I'll head off to Oklahoma. Just they'll be like, who's this old guy in our class?
There we go.
He's here for today's lesson.
There we go. He's going to make a Rorschach with the rest of you.
Yes. Yes, indeed. All right. John, can you share with us some cool teaching strategies that you know about, that you use, that you think other teachers, educators would benefit from using or knowing about?
Yeah. So I discovered this more so when I was teaching college classes. I got really tired of giving like discussion posts for students to respond to, like whether it's in person, whether it's like an online class or not. I a lot of times I would use discussion assignments as homework, like, hey, here's this prompt, think about it, respond to it, comment on a couple of people's prompts, and that's fine. But I just got really bored of doing that. I got really bored of hearing a lot of the same responses. You know, it just felt like just checking off boxes. It felt me that way. I can only imagine what it felt like for the students. So I started doing a little bit of research, academic and just for my own personal use, just trying to figure out, like, is there a way to make discussions more lively, make them more engaging, in a way that could be more meaningful for students? And I started doing some research and practicing with video-based discussion boards. So instead of students just typing out their response, they would actually have to get in front of a camera or put their phone on and talk in front of an app. And there's an app that's called Flip. It used to be called Flipgrid, but Flip is just basically that. It's just, instead of, it's like a video board where students can post, you know, video responses on an app or on their computer. And what I noticed was, like, the richness and quality and detail of discussion posts, like, went up. My interest of watching or listening to what students had to say went up. Like, they were basically able to take their phones or their computer and bring the observer, the listener, into their experience and kind of relate it back to what they're learning. And I thought that was just fascinating to see how students were able to connect with what they're learning rather than just see their text response. And a lot of times it is a lot of the same responses from students, very similar, but this, it was like almost like getting a unique response from each student. So for example, like one of my prompts, I might ask students like, hey, we just learned about classical conditioning in this class. Show me an example of what classical conditioning looked like in your life. Like take your phone out and show me an example. And you'd have students, you know, just showing me like, hey, here's my dog. When I turn the can opener on, my dog comes running in because he's conditioned to hear, you know, food. So it's just like stuff like that. And you're like, oh, I'm seeing you actually, the wheels are turning and you're understanding this, versus who knows what's going on when you're just kind of typing in your answer. And there's not a lot of human connectivity in that.
No. And then with AI, it's like they don't even have to write their own answer anymore.
Right. They could just copy and paste my prompt into ChatGPT, whatever ChatGPT, you know, maybe they tweak it a little bit or whatever. That's fine. But sure. yeah, that's much more authentic. So I've really enjoyed that. And that's something, anytime I have an online class and there's any kind of discussion, I'm like, nope, I want to see your faces now. I want to hear your voice. I don't want this like stale text anymore. So, yeah.
And I like the fact that it takes their technology, which they're using all the time to do videos and stuff anyway. And if I'm a student, I'm like, yeah, I like this more than writing. It's easier. It's more fun. So they're going to like it more.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's like features on the app too, where you can almost make it like social media. Like you can put GIFs and you can put memes. And so, I mean, so it's like, you know, it's just a little more fun than,
yeah.
And just little things like that. Yeah.
Right. Good tip. All right, John, last question. So I've been asking everyone on the podcast this same question. And in my head, I try to predict what they're going to say ahead of time. And I've gotten like two right. So when Hollywood, the big screen, Netflix, whoever, and when they come to Oklahoma City and knock on your door and say, hey, we're going to make a movie about your teaching educational career, who do you think is going to play John Chancey in the big screen movie?
Okay, so this is going to be weird, but I'm going to give you three answers. Two of them are my wishes, my wish list, and one is what I actually think would happen, or I think a real comp. One, if it my wish list, it would be Tom Cruise, and 90% of the movie would just be Tom Cruise running from one classroom to the next, like in between passing periods. Like there's just not enough time, so Tom Cruise is just racing. But anyway.
And he always gets there in time and saves the day, and there's great music, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Does he ever jump anything like in the parking lot, like a motorcycle jumps over a bus or something?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Okay. Definitely. Maybe, right. Yeah, exactly. So we got to jump something in there. Okay. Some explosion's got to be stopped. I don't know. Sure. Some plot defoiled. Who knows? But
saves
definitely
the principal, whatever.
Yeah. Saves the principal, saves the school mascot. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But definitely a lot of running.
Okay.
Second, if it were up to me, I'd have Arnold Schwarzenegger, because guess what? He's already been in the classroom before. We got Kindergarten Cop. Let's do the sequel. Let's put Arnold in a high school classroom.
12th grade cop.
Yeah, 12th grade cop. But no, in all seriousness, no. I was at a technology center doing like a tour for my job. And I talked to this guy, one of the guys who was running it there. And he said I looked a lot like Mark Ruffalo, and I've never thought about that before, but I'm going to go with that. If that was my real answer, I'm just going to say Mark Ruffalo. He can play me. That's fine. I'll take that and run with it.
That works. Throw some glasses on him. He's you.
There we go.
Seattle Kraken jersey, what you're wearing right now. He is you.
Yeah, there we go.
I'm going with, here's my call for you, Matthew Broderick back in the 90s.
Oh.
Huh?
I could see that. I like that. Okay. All right. Yeah. And I like that.
And I'm imagining him as a teacher, but Ferris Bueller as a teacher. How awesome would that be?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Okay. I like that. I would watch that movie. I would 100% watch the movie.
You just wouldn't be able to get anything over on Ferris Bueller as a teacher because he's done it all already. It's
done it all.
Don't even try.
In there.
Yes. Cool.
That would be a good follow-up to Ferris Bueller. Like, what if, you know, he turned out to be a teacher. Who knows? Maybe.
Yeah, there should be a follow-up. Like, what is he doing now? I mean, he could be a teacher or he could be the CEO of a multinational corporation, but he's going to be successful with something.
Right.
Why haven't they made that movie?
Well, for another podcast, that could be a whole other podcast. Why haven't they made this movie?
Sure. Speaking of podcasts, John, how about a shout out to your podcast? What's the name of your podcast?
Well, I have been known from time to record podcasts on the feed called Knowledge Brew Supreme. I've kind of taken a bit of a hiatus right now. I'm not really sure when or if it'll be back. I'd like to, but I've just been busy with life. But pretty sure the last time I've recorded an episode, you were on there. So that just means I definitely got to get back on there and record something. But yeah, it's Knowledge Brew Supreme, and you can find it pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts, I think, most places. But yeah, check it out. There's like 90 episodes there. You can find something you'll like. Six of them, I think. Six or seven, I can't remember. But there's a lot of them with Mike on there. So
a few of them.
Definitely check those out. Yeah.
Cool. All right, John. So I want to thank you for joining us today on the Teach and Tell podcast. Great talking to you. Great seeing you again. Keep up the great work you're doing in the classroom and virtually. And I look forward to talking to you soon.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me. Definitely have to chat again.
All right. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Teach and Tell podcast. Help us spread the word and promote great teachers by giving us a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, I'm Mike Raymer, and I'm here to remind you that econ is life.